The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 14.
Episode 29.
This is Writing Excuses, field research.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And field research is going to take more than 15 minutes to do.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Margaret.
I'm Howard.
And we're talking about field research, the fun part of our job where we get to go places and write it off.
It is actually my favorite part of the job.
I remember talking to Jessica Day George, who we've had on the podcast before, who said, basically tweeted and said, I'm going to Europe and I can't tell you where because it's all about my next book. Mm. And she was going to, you know, to look at castles and to look at historical stuff. And that is not the field research that I get to do. But I remember looking at it thinking, oh, that's actually a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is great.
You get to embed with a space mercenary fleet, though, right?
So I guess my first question for us is, when we're talking specifically about field research, you're going to go someplace and do a thing or interview someone for a primary source. How do you approach it? What is your methodology? How do you take the notes? How do you decide where you're going to go? That sort of thing.
So I've done this both as a writer and then also coming at it from puppet theater. And a lot of what you're looking at is the stuff that you can't get out of the books. And most of this is going to be tiny details. So what I do first is I do a ton of research before I go so that I'm not asking the stupid 101 questions because that's a waste of everybody's time. The other thing that I do is in the process of doing that research, I usually identify an expert that I can reach out to. For instance, we were working on a play about Mary Anning, who is the first widely recognized paleontologist, or fossilist, excuse me, and was born in 1799. So found Dr. Hugh Torrens, wrote to him, said, we're doing this. I would love to, we're going to be coming to London to do research. I would love to connect with you. This is the honorarium that I can offer. And it's not a big honorarium. It was like $150. And for that $150, he went with us to Lyme Regis. He was delighted to talk about this thing that was his passion. He introduced us to the paleontologists that he knew. He introduced us to the fossilists that he knew. He told us which fossilists were worth talking to, which fossil sites to go and look at, what details were relevant. So we went and did those things. And having an expert to give you kind of a targeted in about the stuff that you don't know about was incredibly useful. And that, from that, we were able to bring back a lot of visceral sensory details. Similarly, when we did the NASA thing, like I've gone to the NASA museums a lot, but the difference between doing that and being taken on a tour by an astronaut.
Right, climbing through the replica of the ISS.
Yeah, it's a totally different thing. So you can go without an expert, but mm-hmm. but for me, if you can find someone who is an expert or knows the area, you're gonna get a lot more out of it. Among other things, they're gonna help you shift your lens so that you're seeing things the way that they see them.
Circling back real quick on the honorarium, it's worth noting that what you are paying for with $150 or $200 is not their time. You are buying their belief that you are serious about this. And it's a small sum, but by offering it, experts often know to look for that. Oh, there's an honorarium. Oh, you want to learn things from me. Okay, cool. I'm happy to do this.
And depending on where you are in your career and what you're doing and who the expert is that you're approaching, the definition of small sum can become flexible.
Very much so.
If you're going to a local university because you would like information from someone who is a professor there or something like that, you know, take them out, buy their coffee. That can be a perfectly appropriate honorarium for something like that, especially if you're in the early stages of your career and you're doing something that's basically on spec for you.
Yeah. When I was getting information about meteor strikes, I thought I only had one question. And so took the person out for coffee, and then it turned out that I had more than one question.
There's a framework that I use for a lot of things, knowledge-related, which is this grid that says there are the things that we know that we know. There are the things that we know we don't know, the known unknowns. There are the things that we don't know that we know. You know, we have information, but we don't know how to categorize it. And then there's the unknown unknowns. I don't even know how to ask the question that will get me the information that I need. And acknowledging upfront to yourself that there are unknown unknowns. You know, Mary, you said you don't want to ask the bonehead questions. You don't want to ask the stupid questions. Sometimes you have to acknowledge that I'm going to ask some stupid questions because I just don't know how this works. But you own that upfront. And then when you get thrown a curveball, you know, you wanted to ask one question about meteor strikes, and now suddenly you have 100. You're not surprised by that happening. Mm-hmm. You accept, oh my goodness, the unknown unknowns space was larger than I wanted it to be. And now I have a known unknowns space and a long list of questions, and I am prepared to forge ahead into that.
Yeah, and when I say I don't want to ask the bonehead questions, like, again, working on calculating stars, there was no way I was going to learn the amount of orbital mm-hmm. mechanics that I needed to know for these books. But I knew the area of information. Like, I knew this is this kind of thing, these are the effects I'm coming for. Whereas what happens to me a lot as a puppeteer is that I'll get people who will email me and say, can you tell me how to make a puppet? And I'm like, okay, so there's five different types, five different major branches of puppetry. Within each branch, there are subtypes. What is your budget? That's a question I cannot answer. I mean, there are books and books and books about that.
It's the same measure of complexity as, can you teach me to build a bicycle?
Mm-hmm.
Or the equivalent in my area of the business. Like, so how did you get started in the business? Or how can I break into television? It's like, there are a lot of blogs and a lot of books and a lot of information on that topic out there.
Yeah.
You know, if someone approaches me with that question, I'm sort of like, Google is your friend. If someone has done their homework and they have a more specific question, that's when it's like, oh yeah, I can help you out with that.
Yeah. Like I spent hours answering the how you build a wing because they had watched a video and they came to me with a specific question. And then we did some follow-up stuff. Totally happy to do that.
This is 100% my experience as well, writing on books. Like, I just recently did a fighter jet book, and I thought I had done my 101.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then I went to the fighter pilots, and it turns out I was full of questions I didn't know that I didn't know in Howard's realm. But at least approaching it once my eyes were opened, I was able to kind of get it closer, send it to the fighter pilots, have them say, no, you still got it wrong, but you're closer. Here's this and this and this. And kind of just work toward getting it right.
You just named the unknown, unknown space Howard's realm.
Yeah, Howard's realm.
Thank you for that. When I sat down to draw the Munchkin Starfinder deck, I'm going to take this into a visual space for a moment. I needed ways to do shorthand for a space pistol, shorthand mm-hmm. for a helmet, shorthand for a Velcro pocket, where with just a very few lines I could do a thing. And so I found myself Googling a lot, cartoon image noun, and then I would look at clip art. I would look at things so that I could get silhouettes of them. And my favorite example of that was in the Starfinder book. There's this giant space creature that we just kind of acknowledge as a space whale. And I wanted an iconic whale that everyone would look at and just see whale. And I ended up with the silhouette of the whale that eats Pinocchio and Geppetto. And I used that as the silhouette. And it looks incredibly simple when you look at it. But there was 2.5 hours of research that went into that card because there were so many options for things which, when I simplified them, started looking less like a whale and more like a shark.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, let's stop for our book of the week, which is actually not a book. It is Howard.
It's not a Howard either. It's a podcast, PBS Spacetime. We'll post the link in the liner notes. The original host was Gabe Perez Giz. He never actually says his last name, Gabe. And the current host, Matthew O'Dowd. These are astrophysicists who, for about 15 minutes, talk about astrophysics, and they go into the math. It is hardcore stuff. But the very first episode, the introductory episode, is Gabe talking about, let's look at the Super Mario games and determine what the gravity is on the planet of Super Mario. And what's funny, the answer is it's a lot heavier than Earth because he comes down so quickly, which means Mario's legs are like rocket engines. there's another thing that I'll put in the liner notes is my playlist of chronological episodes. They've been doing this, I think, since 2013 weekly. And at the end of each episode, there's a astrophysics problem for you to look at and try to answer. And if you get to the problem, I didn't do any of the problems. I don't do math. I draw pictures. But I would listen to the problem very carefully and ask myself, what realm does the solution lie in? Am I going to have to do calculus? Am I going to have to do astronomy? And then at the end of the next episode, they give you the answers to the questions from the previous. And it's super educational.
Huh. Awesome.
Super educational. Yeah.
So we're talking technically about field research. We've kind of strayed a little bit. I knew that we would with this topic. Let's talk about going places. I find that nothing can replace just walking down a street with the mindset of, I'm going to have to describe this someday. What are the little details that I'm going to notice? We've spoken many times on the podcast about how small details can convince a reader of a larger reality. If you get the little details right, they will actually assume the large details. And so for me, even if it's, I'm going to put this specific cafe in my book, and it's a cafe down the street from me, it doesn't mean I'm having to go to Paris, but just saying, I'm going to put this building in. What do I notice that's real about this building has been super helpful for me.
Yeah, I usually try to do some free writing in whatever place that I go. I give this exercise to my students. It's one of the first exercises, formal writing exercises I was taught, which is that you go someplace and you write for half an hour and you don't let your fingers stop moving. And you try to capture all of those sensory details, and you're basically banking them for narration later. The thing that I would say also while we're talking about this is that, you know, not everyone can afford to go to NASA or go to Europe. And so you can also look for analog field research. So, you know, it's like I can't go perhaps to Europe, but I can find a narrow street. I can find a narrow street and feel what that's like to walk down. I can't go to that cemetery, but I can go to this other cemetery and I can notice these details about it. I can't go into the NBL pool, but I can go into a pool.
Yeah, I think sort of what you're talking about is getting those sensory details, because as much as I love my camera when I'm going out and I'm going to a place or I'm documenting something for research that I'm doing, it's sort of like when you're going on a vacation and you're snapping so many pictures, you sort of forget to look at things outside the lens. And you know, what your camera captures is different than what your eyes capture. And so making sure, even if you, as you are photo documenting details, if that's, you know, helpful for you, that sort of, you know, taking a step back, breathing literally and figuratively in the place where you are.
One of my favorite research moments, it wasn't really research, was going to Phoenix Comic Con, and a bunch of us, you know, stepped out of the airport, and boy, it was hot. We were in the shade, okay? And we all commented, oh, this is, wow, this is hot. And then we stepped into the sunlight, and David Willis, fellow cartoonist, said in a very deadpan voice, we've made a horrible mistake. And everybody laughs. But that sensory experience, you look at the picture of the line between shade and sunlight, and it looks like that line anywhere that shade and sunlight might fall, but that was not what we experienced.
Mm. Along those lines, a reminder, don't just write down what things look like.
Yeah.
I have to reemphasize this time and time again to my students. You will naturally focus on sight, at least most of us will. Try to get the sounds, try to get the smells, try to get how it feels to step out of an air-conditioned area into the heat. Get those details as well.
Yeah, I had an apartment fire in the first apartment I was living in after college. The fire was actually in the apartment immediately underneath ours. Oof. So our apartment, not so much, there was some fire that had come up through the walls, but it was mostly smoke and then the fire department coming in and wetting everything down. The most profound memories that I carried forward from cleaning out the apartment after that was the smell of smoky mildew.
Ugh.
Because it is summer in Boston, it is humid, there is no air circulation because all the windows got busted out and are covered in plywood. And, you know, whenever I was writing something else and I described a fire, and it's like the smell of smoke and mildew hung over the place in the following week. And it's one
really
of those
evocative
things where, yeah, I never would have thought about it until I was there, you know, trying to get stuff out of that apartment. So smells are like hardwired to your memories.
On the 2017 Writing Effuses retreat, I got to tour a World War II era Russian submarine. And one of the things that I noticed most was not how cramped the large spaces were, but was when we peered into the cabins and I realized I'm not a tall person, but these people must not have been very tall either, or they were curled up. There's just not much space. And a physical description of what you see can convey the size of things, but there is an emotion related to cramped. There is an emotion related to open space. There is an emotion related to all of my things smell like burnt cheese. And that, as writers, is one of the things that is the most critical for us to try to convey. You know, you don't want to tell your reader how to feel. You want to tell your reader what someone else is feeling so that they can come along for that experience.
We are out of time. Hopefully this has been helpful to you guys. Howard is going to give you some homework to kind of push you along.
Go someplace close to you where you've never been. It can, you know, a side street, a store, a restaurant, whatever. Bring your phone, bring your camera, and take a few pictures. Then go back, look at the pictures, and look for things in the pictures that your eyes didn't notice, and sit down and describe what is in this photograph as if you are writing that as a setting for a story, you know, as if a character is noticing these things. Teach your eyes how to look at the camera and see the things that the camera saw that your eyes didn't see the first time around.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses is a Dragonsteel production, jointly hosted by Brandon Sanderson, Dan Wells, Mary Robinette Kowal, and Howard Taylor. This episode was mastered by Alex Jackson.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.